FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. Today's 9/19/17. That means we are almost done with September. Probably a good thing, except that October is a month where many crashes have been known to happen, financial and otherwise, and you just never know. But questions, comments, email me at kl@kerrylutz.com. So there's big news that broke in the past couple of days. Turns out that Trump Tower really was bugged, and certain conversations of the president's, no doubt, were part of that bugging effort. So here to opine on the subject is former Congressman John LeBoutelier. John, welcome back.
Thank you, Kerry. It's always good to be on with you post Irma, and that you're up and well and able to do the show, and that part of Florida, not the Keys, but where you are, survived, thank God.
Yeah, we dodged a major, major bullet, and I'm proud to say I only missed one day of programming. You know, like they say on Broadway, the show must go on.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you're going on.
Yeah, hey, nothing's stopping me, short of, we had a power failure here. I was in a friend's pool house doing the show from there with a portable studio, but, it's got to be serious to stop us. But, Trump was widely berated, belittled, ridiculed about his assertion that the Trump Tower was bugged. And then yesterday, or was it the day before, I think maybe Sunday, it comes out and CNN breaks the story, no less. One of Trump's biggest detractors that, the FBI got a FISA warrant. That's the Foreign Intelligence Court, very secretive. And not only did they get it once, they got it twice. And they were bugging Paul Manafort, who lives in Trump Towers or has a place there. And they were actually listening in on conversations that he had with President-elect Trump. What's your take on this?
Well, the original tweet in February, I think it was, or March, from the president was that Obama had Trump Tower wired. And that is an incorrect charge. What it is, we now know from this story, is the FISA court, of which Trump, which Obama had nothing to do with, they did grant these warrants to listen in to Paul Manafort's phone calls. And his phone, if it was in Trump Tower, they were listening to calls in Trump Tower. If he was in Kiev, Ukraine, they're listening in Kiev, Ukraine. It wasn't bugging Trump Tower. It was bugging Paul Manafort wherever he was. Mm. So I think Trump confused the issue when he did the original tweet. But the bottom line is they were listening to Manafort during the campaign, after the campaign, during the transition, and during the presidency, because unbeknownst to all of us, Trump and Manafort have maintained a relationship, including phone calls during the presidency. Mm-hmm. And that has to worry the White House a lot. What was said on those calls, it sort of goes along with this very weird incident that took place on Saturday, where a New York Times reporter is having lunch outdoors at BLT Steak Restaurant a few blocks from the White House. He's got a source there that he's interviewing for a story. And he looks, and at the table next to him is John Dowd, President Trump's outside lead attorney, and Ty Cobb, the White House attorney in charge of the Mueller investigation liaison stuff. And those two guys are having lunch, talking out loud in a public restaurant about the case and dumping on fellow White House staffers and saying there's fear in the White House that so-and-so is wearing a wire for Mueller. Mm-hmm. And that sort of goes along with this Manafort story, that everybody's going to start worrying now, Kerry, that they're all cooperating with Mueller against each other and wearing wires. And that's going to make a very difficult White House atmosphere to work in, that's for sure.
Well, maybe they knew who was there, and they did that deliberately, too. You know, they could be pretty Machiavellian, these politicos, when they set their minds to it.
Could be. No, we don't know. They haven't commented since then what they were, you know, they were overheard. Did they know this guy was a reporter sitting at the next table? Who knows? Mm-hmm. But anyway, back to the Manafort thing. Along with the fact that they had a FISA warrant on him and may still have it, we get into the details of the raid into his house and the 6 a.m. picking a lock of his apartment, coming in while he's still in bed, and raiding a storage facility that he had in Maryland and another one in Florida, and a lot of stuff with Manafort. And then told him, prosecutors working for Mueller told him they were going to indict him.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly, the Mueller investigation is farther along than the mainstream press has realized, and that Mueller's moving very quickly, trying to flip Manafort, and I think General Flynn also, to flip them to rat out Trump on what went on in the campaign with the Russians. Was there cooperation between the Trump campaign and the Russian effort to disrupt the election? That's really what the whole investigation is about.
What's your opinion? Do you think there was, or what?
Well, let me back up. Mueller's got two tasks that he's been charged with. One, did Russia meddle in the election in a criminal fashion? Number two, did the Trump campaign work with, assist, help, whatever, with the Russians? On the first one, on number one, there's no doubt that the Russians were all over the election. We are learning every day about they're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on Facebook with phony names and phony accounts to plant fake news stories, to have rallies, anti-immigration rallies that are pro-Trump. They clearly were all over this thing in a digital way. They were hacking the DNC, that we know, and leaking it to WikiLeaks. We know all that. Meeting in Trump Tower with Donald Trump Jr., Manafort, Kushner. We've heard all that. But now we're learning of operationally they're working on Facebook to influence the election.
Yeah, well,
the only question, that's a done deal to me. They will say, yes, they did it. The head of every intelligence agency under Trump, Dan Coats, Admiral Rogers, Mike Pompeo, under oath in the House Intelligence Committee, every one of them said Russia meddled in the election.
Well,
so that, I think that's settled. I think the only issue to be determined is, was there assistance, request for assistance, direction from the Trump campaign? That's really where Mueller is at.
Yeah, well, as far as where the DNC emails came from, there's a countervailing argument that's pretty powerful that it was, in fact, an insider, perhaps Seth Rich, who leaked all that. And some computer experts have examined the emails and found that they, in all likelihood, came from an insider source. So that's not established. Plus, the FBI never examined Hillary's server, because they are the DNC server, to look for the source of the hack. The DNC used an outside company with very close ties to the DNC, which came to that conclusion. So that, I think, is a little murkier, but there's certainly something there. I mean, I guess the Russians were, you know, buying Facebook advertising for what that's worth. There are people in the world who get most of their information from Facebook. I don't quite understand that, because I think if you really want to know what the truth is, Fakebook is the last place. They're censoring everything. They're in the name of curating content. And, you know, they're just kind of very disingenuous about the whole thing of Facebook. If you're getting your info from Facebook, then you probably believe that we never landed on the moon, and hey, that Lee Harvey Oswald assassinated Kennedy too. You know, who knows what you believe if you're getting your info from Facebook. How much of an impact that can have is just open to debate. But what about?
But you know, Carrie, it goes along with a Wall Street Journal story of several months ago where they said that U.S. government intercepts during the campaign, phone call intercepts, showed that the Russians intended to spend a lot of money in the 2016 American presidential campaign. Now, they weren't able to pin down how it was going to be spent, on whom, directly, indirectly, given, donated, whatever. But that there was a plan by the Russian government to spend a lot of money. And then you start hearing that Facebook has admitted publicly to a couple hundred thousand, but now they said that's the tip of the iceberg, and they're cooperating with Mueller on providing information about who placed the ads, how much money, where the companies are that paid for it. I mean, there's a lot that we're going to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, I mean, the French election that Macron ultimately won a week before he was elected in April or May, whatever it was, massive Russian government operation online to influence that election. And Macron called out Putin the week before the election, told him to cut it out.
Mm-hmm.
And alerted the French. So this is a habit that the Russians have. They're trying to influence elections.
Yeah,
the only question, hey, is in the American case, did the Trump campaign ask for help, direct the help, say, well, we need Facebook ads. We need stuff done in Michigan and Wisconsin the last week to sew this thing up. If there's any of that, then we're talking about the most serious crime ever in an election ever.
Yeah.
There's any of that.
Well, I guess we will find out in due course, won't we?
We're going to find out fairly quickly, I think. I think that Mueller started and already had a well-developed case done by the FBI over the last year.
Mm-hmm.
Because the first FISA warrant, as you opened up the show with, the FISA warrant was late July 2016.
Oh.
So the FBI was collecting from then on, and all through the general election and since then. And we didn't know about the Manafort one, and we don't know about other ones. I mean, maybe there's one on Flint. We don't know.
I guarantee you we know there's one on that guy, Carter Page.
All right. Well, that was the one. That's the first one that has been publicly admitted to. And by the way, when they went for the Carter Page FISA warrant late July 2016, one of the items that was presented to the court, the FISA court, which is federal judges,
mm-hmm.
was the now infamous dossier on Donald Trump.
Yeah, the fraudulent
dossier. And that was presented to the court as mm-hmm. part of the evidence to justify getting the warrant, which they got.
Yeah, well, look, I seriously doubt that Loretta Lynch took it upon herself to go start investigating all these figures on the within the Trump campaign, all right? That I just find difficult to believe because, she just wasn't that motivated. And
why wouldn't she be motivated? She was promised to stay as Attorney General if Hillary got elected.
Well, I'm saying.
So why wouldn't she want to take down Trump?
She wouldn't have done it without somebody in the White House approving it. That's just my point. I seriously doubt it. And that means Obama. So Obama, his administration was responsible. And look, the buck stops in the Oval Office here, John. You know, so I guess we'll just have to wait to see what happens.
So do you believe, and I don't know the answer, do you believe that every time the FBI goes to a federal FISA court judge and asks for wiretapping, a warrant to wire, you believe the president of the United States is involved in that?
Oh, no. But the magnitude of these warrants, okay, the potential ramifications, I think, bureaucrats, they are not risk takers.
What would be wrong if Obama did know? He, after all, a month, 6 weeks after this original FISA request was made, he confronted face-to-face Vladimir Putin over this issue and told him to cut it out.
Sure.
And Putin denied that they had anything to do with the election.
Well,
this is September, 1 year ago.
My point is that, in matters of delicate matters like this, where you're investigating figures connected to the Republican candidate for president, I seriously doubt you know, the FBI had to get the Justice Department involved. And the Justice Department, in cases like this, they don't just, you don't have some, you know, assistant U.S. attorney say, gee, that sounds like a good idea, let's do it. No, it goes up the chain and goes up way up the chain in these major political cases.
Actually, I don't know for sure. I know that they get someone from the National Security Council. There's a designated person on the staff there, a lawyer, who's involved with the FBI in the request of the FISA court for the warrant. But, you know, it doesn't matter, Kerry, if a president of the United States knows about it. What difference does it make? The FISA court decides on its own. They don't give a damn about what the president wants.
They're a rubber stamp, John. We know that.
They're usually a rubber stamp. That's absurd. By the way, that shows how little you know. They turned this down twice before they gave it.
Yeah. In this case,
they're not a rubber stamp.
Yeah. In this case, they didn't.
They turned it down twice.
Right. In this case, they didn't rubber stamp it, but virtually all the applications that go to them for wiretapping are approved. And, you know, they could be considered.
So what? I mean, if the FBI rolls in there and says we have suspicion that Carter Page or Paul Manafort are acting as agents for a foreign government and we want to monitor them. What's wrong with that?
My point is that Comey said that, you know, Trump Tower wasn't wiretapped. Loretta Lynch said it. OK, so, you know, there's a dispute here, just like
there is no dispute. There is no dispute. Mm-hmm. And the current attorney general and Justice Department said Trump. That's why I clarified for you. The charge was Obama had Trump Tower wiretapped. That is incorrect. And the Trump Justice Department, Kerry, has publicly said there's no evidence of that. None. Mm-hmm. So you can't keep repeating something that's not true. What Trump himself did, I'm sure he found out that Manafort was being wired.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean Obama ordered it, and it doesn't mean Trump Tower was wired. It means Manafort was wired wherever Manafort is. So if he's in his office in the campaign, okay. But if he's in his bathroom in Virginia, he's being wired.
Mm-hmm. Well, we know he was in Trump Tower a lot of the time when this was going on.
He was in there till August 9th when he got canned.
Right. He was there. So,
we didn't know that he was still involved in the campaign after he got fired. And the president himself tried to minimize his role in the campaign after they fired him. Yeah. I wasn't that involved.
Well, but look,
he was the campaign manager and the chairman of the campaign. Mm-hmm. And now we find out he was still talking to Trump after he's gone during the transition and during the presidency.
But look, we know that the Obama administration isn't above using pretexts to get what they want. And the end goal could have very well been to bug Trump by bugging all of these people around him. But in any event, all of that hopefully will come out. The justifications, because we know that that dossier was pure garbage. And the fact is, it was probably paid for by the Democrats to get it using Steele, the former MI5 or 6 agent who got it from some Russians on background. I mean, the whole dossier thing is kind of ridiculous. And then they knew it was false. And then to use that as justification.
Okay, so let me put some facts on the table.
Right.
Number one, Christopher Steele has worked for years with the FBI,
mm-hmm.
and he originally was involved with them on the FIFA investigation, the world soccer body that was totally,
right.
and was one of the guys that helped bring that about. Number two, he was hired by Republicans, not Democrats at first. Republicans running in 2015 and 16 against Trump. They hired the firm that hired Christopher Steele. So to partisanize it, make it out that it's the Democrats, wrong.
Well, but Fusion
Third,
GPS.
Hold on. Let me make one point.
All right.
Third, the reason I raised it was, if, as you say, it was totally garbage, then I really doubt that the FBI would have presented it to the FISA court in the Carter Page case to get the warrant. And the fact that the FISA court accepted it and issued the warrant tells May that it is not garbage.
Well, I mean, some of the allegations in there are just absurd. But what about Fusion GPS?
Well, maybe. What about
Fusion GPS? Fusion GPS. Fusion GPS.
And by the way, the intelligence community, our intelligence community, has never vouched for the veracity, publicly anyway, of that dossier. They've never
said it. For good reason.
It
was absurd.
They've looked into it, but they don't vouch for it one way or the other.
Right. But Fusion GPS, who wound up carrying the ball on this, Grassley's right. saying that they received money from the Russian government. And, you know, they're very closely connected to Democrat organization. Anyway, not to dredge all that up, because at this point, it's probably going to come out. But, hey, what about, I know we didn't mention this pre-call, but what about Hillary Clinton's book campaign here? You got any feelings on that?
Well, I think it helps Trump. Having her back out of all the shows and hearing that crap all over again reminds a lot of people why they voted the way they voted. And who wants to hear her? Can you imagine waking up today and having her be the president?
Hey, and it's, the book, it just like she blames everybody, right? I mean, who didn't she blame for her loss other than herself?
I haven't read it. I did read a thing yesterday in the Washington Post email I get where she does blame herself, too. But, yeah, she blames a lot of other people. It's not true that she doesn't take any blame. The little thing I read, she did take some blame for things, but
very little.
You know, Hillary's little. A tired act. People don't want to hear it.
Yeah, well, even the Democrats are starting to turn on her now, right?
Oh yeah, they're sick of her, and I think she still wants to run again.
Mm.
And she's hoping if Trump fails as president, she's thinking in her head, "I'll come back in 2020 and run again, and my whole campaign will be 'I told you so.'" And they stole it from me.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that's going to work. I don't think the Democratic Party wants her anymore. I think they're sick of the Clintons, the whole thing.
For good reason.
I know we are. I mean, the country's sick of it.
God, like, how much of this can you take already? Enough is enough. And she doesn't write the books, obviously. There's a ghostwriter involved. She's never written any of her books, to my knowledge. But, you know, this one's kind of like, I think, her pièce de résistance. It's over after this one. I don't see a future for her once the dust settles on this book debacle.
Right. Well, I think there'll be something. You'll hear about her. I mean, she might be the president of a college or get some sort of, you know, TV gig where she gives commentary. There'll be something. There are enough lefties around that'll want to keep her doing something. But as a major player in elected politics, I would think it's finito for her.
Yeah. Well, we can only hope. We can only hope. So we've got repeal of Obamacade on the calendar yet again. And
right.
This one looks like it basically calls for block grants for Medicaid without getting into all the other stuff. There's some other key elements to it, but that is the biggest thing. It's put out by Lindsey Graham, and I don't remember who the other sponsor of it was, but it looks like it's getting some serious attention because there's a clock ticking about being able to repeal through reconciliation in accordance with the Senate's arcane rules. And what's going to happen here?
Well, they have to do it by September 30th, so we've got a week to go, week and a half.
Yeah.
Under those rules, otherwise you need 60 votes. The bill is co-sponsored with Bill Cassidy from Louisiana, who's
That's
a doctor.
Right. Yes.
He's been pushing this bill for a long time. Basically, what it is this block grant thing, it's each state can decide its own health care system, and the feds will give you a lot of money, and you do what you want with it. That's basically what it is. And this time, I don't think they'll ever bring it to a vote, Kerry, unless Mitch McConnell guaranteed has 50-0 votes.
Yeah.
Remember last time when McCain went thumbs down, they had 49. And they need 50 because Pence breaks the tie.
Right.
So we're back to the same three people. Rand Paul's already said no.
Mm-hmm.
And we have three. McCain, Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski. Those are the same three as last time. If two of them say no, it's dead.
Yeah. Well, so McCain is.
I think that's right.
I think it's two. Basically McCain will probably go for it because he's best buddies with Lindsey Graham, and he's on his way out. So he would really injure his protege. You know, Murkowski is really the question. Collins probably ain't going to go for it, but Murkowski. So this is where the arm twisting and. You know, you were involved in the system. How do they force Murkowski?
Well, they did it. They did it wrong with her last time. You know,
yeah.
A couple months ago, when this came up, they had the Secretary of the Interior, Ryan Zinke, who used to be a congressman, call her up and lean on her.
Yeah.
And in a very threatening manner, and she took great umbrage at it and has retaliated A by voting against it and B by. Canceling here. She's head of the Interior Committee in the Senate.
Right.
So any money, any appropriations, any appointments, anything that that department wants goes through her, and she canceled all the hearings. No confirmation hearings, no appropriate, nothing. She's screwing Zinke and Interior for treating her badly.
But
so they're going to have to try a different approach on her this time.
And I think the approach is already being prepared by Trump in allowing drilling in Anwar. That all of a sudden came out of nowhere, John, and sounds like a very attractive, for lack of a better word, inducement to Murkowski to go along with this.
Well, maybe. If that's what she wants, then that's what it's all about.
Well, look, Alaska, there's one industry that dominates it, and it's not salmon fishing or king crab fishermen. It's oil. Oil has owned that state lock, stock, and barrel since the since the approval of the building of the Alaska pipeline. And if you remember, the vice presidential...
Sarah Palin.
Yeah,
Sarah Palin
took on big oil and really took them to task. And so they got rid of her. And now it's basically status quo antebellum. And, you know, you got to figure, you got to follow the money. And she can't remain senator of Alaska without support of big oil. I don't see how that happens.
All right. Well, then maybe. Anyway, this time I'm sure McConnell will not want a 1:15 a.m. surprise turn down of this repeal effort. So he's going to have 50 hard votes before he takes it to the floor.
Yeah, for sure.
And they're counting and working right as we're talking right now to do this.
Hey, well, this is how the sausage gets made, John, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so. Yeah,
and it's why Trump never should have gotten so mad at Mitch McConnell.
Right.
When they failed by one vote back in the summer. Because often in Washington, you have to keep going at these things, break people down, wear them out over time, and win a war of attrition. And
so true.
If they get it to 50 this time, that's what would have happened. And it hasn't taken that long. It's a few months. I mean,
well,
14 months for Obamacare to be put into law.
Right.
If it took 10 months to take it out of law, is that bad?
Hey, look, I think the fact that the Congress is perceived as doing nothing, which I don't think is totally fair, but there is a good point. They've been promising for 7 years to repeal Obamacare, and then the vote comes and they can't do it, and all these machinations going on. I think it could be an existential failure for some of these Republicans in the Senate and in the House. And
It should be. It should be. You win elections promising not just to repeal it, but to replace it with something better.
Exactly.
And they had no plan. They BS'd the country. They never had a plan. Yeah. We really still don't have a plan.
Well,
had one plan. Now we're trying this Cassidy plan. They don't have a Republican plan.
And if I could just comment on the Cassidy plan, one of the major reasons why the healthcare system is so messed up is because of the power of state insurance departments to mandate inclusions in health insurance policies.
Right.
And this thing does nothing to get rid of it. And that was one thing that Trump ran on.
Makes it stronger.
Exactly. And Trump ran.
That's why Obamacare put in these rules mandating certain things had to be in every Obamacare approved insurance plan because the states wouldn't do it.
Exactly.
So
the concept of buying insurance, though, over state lines, could be perhaps the best idea to come down here, along with taking out the requirements, the you know, the things that just diminishing the state insurance departments to some extent. Because like in New York, you know, my former home state where you reside, you if you're not a insurance company with a triple A rating and crossed every T and dotted every I with New York State, you aren't selling insurance in that state. That's good. And it's also bad because it really narrows the choices because maybe all I can afford is a B plus. I can't afford an A plus company. And, you know, they've really stood in the way of reforming a system that really needs major reform here, but in a different way than everybody's talking about.
Right. Yep.
Well
it's and one thing I should add in just for our listeners to know, in the middle of all this, six days ago, comes Bernie Sanders unveiling national health insurance, Medicare for everybody, with 17 senators co-sponsoring it.
Yeah.
And this is going to be in our faces and in our ears for years to come now, a push to have a single national health care plan run by the government. And it will gather strength as we get closer to 2020.
I have no doubt that you're correct, even though it doesn't seem to really be resonating with the public, but that doesn't really matter.
First, it's going to resonate on the left in the Democratic Party, which it will, and it will get into the election in 2018 a little bit, and in the presidential election in 2020, where I expect Bernie Sanders to be running for president again.
It'll be 100.
And he will run on this thing.
But he's going to be 100 at that point, right?
Yeah, well.
110?
Well, to him, you know, he was 70, what was he this time, 74?
Yeah, 74. He was the
74.
Oldest.
And by the way, all the candidates were in their 70s. Hillary was just about to be 70. Trump was 70.
Yeah.
Biden, if he'd run, was 72 or 3 or something. So our country's changing to where they'll accept older candidates. We never had a 7-year-old run for president until last year, and then we have 3 of them.
Yeah, remarkable. Yeah. Remarkable. Well, hey, experience. You can't emphasize the value of experience in this. But Bernie's a little off the wall. So, hey, we'll have to see what happens here, John. John, where do we go find you these days?
JohnLaboute.com. is the best place.
All right, johnlaboute.com. We'll always have a link to it in the show notes to this interview on Financial Survival Network. Again, you got a question for John, just send an email to me, kl@kerrylutz.com. The Twitter feed, it's been heating up lately, is @KerryLutz. The Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. John, we'll talk to you again real soon. Thanks for checking in.
Love doing it, Kerry. Talk to you soon.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.